Hello.
Hi.
Would you please start by telling me your full name, the date, the time, and your location?
My name is Jesse Meehan. It is Wednesday, May 5th, and I'm in Los Angeles.
And do you consent to having this interview recorded, digitally uploaded, and publicly released under a Creative Commons license attribution non-commercial share alike?
I do consent.
And would you please start by introducing yourself to anyone who might find themselves listening to this? What would you want them to know about you and the place that you're speaking from?
My name, again, is Jesse Meehan, and I'm a queer female, and I'm in a band called Wazzy, and, you know, we've been playing together for quite some time, and it's a lot of fun, electronic kind of punky music. I also worked in television as a set dresser. So that's pretty much what I'm up to. I'm been a big advocate for queer visibility, out in life, in work, everywhere, and having safe spaces. Like, my band is very much about safe spaces and whatnot. So I guess, that's a little overview in a nutshell, I suppose.
And what has the word pandemic come to mean to you?
Pandemic? I mean, that's definitely a tough question. I've been fairly, I've done okay. It was more of a transformative period for me. Like I said, that was for me, but I know a lot of people have struggled in various ways this last year. So I would say pandemic to me is kind of goes along with the word transformative. And that could be like good or bad, depending on, you know, how it affected different people this last year, I would say.
To the extent that you're comfortable sharing, would you say something about your experiences with health and healthcare infrastructure prior to the pandemic?
Okay. I definitely have a lot of health problems, or I've had a lot of health problems, and I've had to spend a lot of time at the doctors and in hospitals. And I've been, again, it's like been a mix. I've been very lucky, and I've also like been on the other side of it too. When you have really great healthcare, it's easy access. You know what I mean? I had great healthcare when I was young, and I have great healthcare now through my job. And, you know, I'm very fortunate and grateful for that. And it's easy to deal with, easy to navigate. There was a section of my life in my 20s, basically most of my 20s, I was on Medi-Cal. And Medi-Cal is great because you don't have to pay for it, but also it kind of comes at a price with the accessibility aspect of it, like being able to get to a doctor when you need to. A small example is, I broke a couple fingers that needed surgery, and by the time I was able to get the surgery, they were already kind of healed wrong. So that's kind of, I guess, the difference between like Medi-Cal having to navigate that, or the insurance I have now, which would have probably bypassed a lot of the hoops that I had to go through the first time. And like being in the office with 50 other people that are trying to, you know, get help at the same time, and you know, they put the wrong code in on the office end, and who knows how many people this happens to. So it takes 6 weeks to get a surgery. You should have gotten in 2 weeks. So that's like a difference. So not sure if that like super answered your question, but that's been my experience with that.
And staying in the pre-pandemic world, what was your day-to-day looking like before March 2020?
I definitely like, I was working a lot. I'm working a lot again, but the difference between then and now is mental health and awareness. Like I've definitely like, I believe it was like March 13th was my last day of work last year. And I'd been working a lot up until that point. And I focused so much on the external and what was going on outside my life that I didn't realize how much pain and how many things, how much I was holding on to on the inside. And it wasn't until, you know, I was in a significant long-term relationship that ended right before the pandemic started. So then I went from, you know, being married and working full time to being completely alone for the first time in my life, you know, at 32 and having all these things come up for me that I didn't realize were there. So I was able to ignore it by just working a lot. So that's kind of like how I was. I was kind of like, I don't want to say numb, but I was definitely like checked out, like really checked out before the pandemic hit.
And what are some of the ways that you transformed in the pandemic?
Well, seeing a therapist for the first time in my adult life is a big step. I guess definitely like realizing that something wasn't right. I didn't feel good in my body. I was like so focused. Like I have a lot of body dysmorphia related to gender, related to sexuality, related to a lot of things. You know, I've suffered my whole life with various, you know, like a body and eating disorder behavior and disordered eating. And, at the very beginning of the pandemic, you know, I was, like I said, very, very not in my body, not eating, over exercising, like going into it. And then, I am also part of a 12-step program. You know, I'm sober, I've been sober a long time, and some friends noticed that my behavior was abnormal and they're like, you should check out this other program and get some help there. So I did, and I'm so grateful I did. Between, you know, like I said, for me, the pandemic was transformative in a positive way. It was a chance for me to like slow down and see like, okay, I'm really struggling here emotionally, and there's a lot of things that I've neglected my whole life by going along. I'm good. I'm going to be a service to other people and just ignore myself. And then when I'm by myself and I can't be a service, I realize, you know, I have all these issues I need to work on. So between therapy, a 12-step program, I got into surfing. I learned how to surf and became obsessed with surfing. Went every day, got pretty decent at it. And being in a wetsuit helped with my body image of myself. So all of those things combined and self-care, meditation, like the whole thing was very transformative for me. That was like a very long-winded answer to your question.
I want to assure you there are no overly long-winded answers. It's an oral history. Everything you give me is a gift. So
well,
no concerns.
I appreciate that. Well, you know, I could talk your ear off all day, and I hope you could talk my ear off too. I love you.
Would you be willing to say a bit about what you remember when you first heard about the pandemic? So when it first hit your radar, what hit your radar and what were your initial reactions like?
Honestly, like I said, at the time I was working, so it seemed very like abstract. It was like, oh, okay, there's something crazy that's kind of happening. Like it's coming over here. Like, you know, people should be careful. Oh, like we're starting to wear masks now. That's crazy. You know what I mean? So it was kind of like, it was just very abstract until everything shut down. And then I was like, oh, this is a real thing that we are now all having to recognize and respect and not mess around with, because it's not good to expose other people or expose yourself. I was very fortunate. I'm fully vaccinated now. I've never had COVID. Somehow I got very lucky. Never caught it. But I did take it very seriously. And, when I first heard about the pandemic, it was just very abstract until we were all locked down. And I was like, oh, this is crazy. This is real. And we all are having to deal with this now.
And how did that reaction evolve over time?
Became normal. That's basically the main thing, you know? Like I said, I was off for 10 months and it just became like, it still feels like a normal part of life. Like it's so strange just today. So I'm working right now again. I've been working since January, and two people that I work with, I've worked with them since February, early February, something like that. I have not seen their faces, their whole face. And it's been however many months, and we went out to lunch today and I saw their whole face, and it was jarring. So yeah, I think it's just like, we all say, oh, when is this going to end? And I don't necessarily think it's, there's like an end in sight, but a transition. And it's just really crazy. Like, it, like I said, it's just become like a way of life. There's nobody that hasn't been affected by this. And we all, you know, hopefully everybody's getting vaccinated and we can move about the world in a more open way like we did before the pandemic shut everything down. But at this point in time, it just feels normal.
So 2020 was a pretty big year, and 2021 is also shaping up to perhaps be sizely. I'm wondering what some of the bigger issues have been on your mind across this period of time.
Definitely. I mean, there's a lot of social justice and activism that's happening right now. Being aware, like being like, I've already been like, well, I have a lot of friends that are BIPOC, and like, I've been aware of social justice issues, and I speak up about it like when I need to, and when it's when it's necessary. And definitely the last year, like, thank God there's like a little bit of justice that's happening. Like, well, not justice, but progress, I should say, because there's no justice in killing people. But, you know, I'm at least on my end of it, I think, especially like in the workplace, sometimes there's probably like pretty problematic conversation. So my job in that space is to kind of, I guess, like bring it like, hey, that's not really how we talk. That's not really appropriate language that we use, you know, like just really being hyper aware of what people are saying and correcting it when it happens on a very minor scale. I mean, that's not going out and I mean, obviously I was out protesting and was very much like in the middle of all that. I feel very strongly about these issues, but on a smaller scale, on a day to day, I think it's really important to make it known that times are changing and, you know, we need to respect everybody. And even if I'm a white person among all other white people and they're saying problematic things about people that are not white or people that are disabled or whatever the case may be, I need to say something, and that's not right. So I guess that's kind of what's been on my mind lately. You know, there's a lot, like again, the vaccinations have been on my mind. Hopefully more people are getting vaccinated, at least on the COVID side of things. Definitely like a lot of different issues, I guess, for a lot of different people right now, but we're in it together.
Could I ask you about what protests felt like conducted during the pandemic in contrast to other times?
You know what? It definitely, it felt more like, I'm trying to like find the words to say it. It felt more like, oh, okay, cool. Like perhaps this is going to actually change things. Perhaps something's going to be different after this. And that's for me, like it felt more like progress and less like just blowing off steam. If that makes sense, that was the difference. Whether that's to be seen, I guess, is, you know, that history will show that. So far, I know that we're just around the corner after the Derek Chauvin trial. And again, not justice, but progress in that. But I guess like seeing that happen was hopeful that things will slowly, hopefully slowly change. You know, it's still really bad and needs a lot of work. And hopefully it's getting better. And like I said, now as opposed to previous protests, that was definitely how I felt.
What was it that gave it that extra quality of feeling like it would go further?
I suppose it maybe it felt a little less performative in some way or another. I'm not really sure how to articulate like really well on that, but you know, I guess seeing seeing people like, I mean, and it's been this way in the other in the past with the BLM protests and marches and all that stuff. But seeing like the sheer violence of law enforcement and whatnot towards the protesters was definitely, it seemed a lot like it was a lot more intense this time around. And, you know, just seeing the magnitude of how many people like showed up and how people are bringing awareness to it. And like I said, now, and I have a lot of Asian friends as well, Asian Pacific Islander friends. And like now seeing a lot of awareness being arisen around that as well has been really helpful, or like, it's really hopeful, I should say, that there's going to be change there as well. So, I guess that for me, like seeing a lot of like specifically like racial justice issues being brought up, and not like, okay, well, it's gone away now. Like it's still a daily conversation. You know what I mean? That to me feels like there's progress being made.
I'm curious, what does health mean to you?
Health, like in a physical sense or a mental sense or both?
Any sense you'd like.
That's a great question. What does health mean to me? I would say that health is a bodily awareness. You know, whether you're in good health or not such good health, like being aware of where you're at, and mentally as well. I think awareness is definitely like the first word I think of. And because I can relate to being unhealthy physically and mentally, I know what that felt like compared to being healthy in both of those ways. So I think that's awareness. Awareness is what I think of.
What are some of the things that you want for your own health and the health of those around you? And how do you think that we could get there?
Again, I definitely come from a place of privilege when it comes to that, because my access to the healthcare system is really good. And I'm aware for the folks that don't have it like that. And I've been in that position, so I know the difference. I think that having general healthcare for people, like to have it the same, so there isn't a disparity between somebody that has better access because of financial reasons or social class. I think that healthcare is very classist. And I think changing that and making it not that way and making it a general, centralized, universal system is going to be what makes it fair and makes it equal for everybody. And that's what I would like to see personally, you know, and at least on my end, I already get paid a lot of taxes, and I don't mind paying more taxes if it means that, you know, people that are less privileged than I am have less health care. I would pay more taxes to help so that we can have a universal health care system and also appropriately compensate nurses and physicians and people that work within the healthcare system.
What does safety mean to you?
Safety is not being in fear of like not just physical harm, but like shelter and food, the basic necessities of life. Safety is having a sense of security, I think.
There's been a very sort of constrained and narrow discussion about safety in relationship to COVID and viral spreading. I'm wondering, under that sort of smaller framework, how you've been negotiating what feels safe for you with those around you.
Definitely, it feels a little different now because I'm vaccinated, and like most of the people that I hang out with now are mostly vaccinated. So there's definitely, it's a lot looser on that end of it. But like before that, I think being aware, like I said, I took it seriously. I didn't stay home for 10 months. I know some people like stayed home, didn't leave their house that whole time. I needed to surf. I needed to interact with other people. I'm a very social person and I needed to do that. So I did, but I did it with people that I knew weren't being reckless. You know, I like went to the grocery store once every 2 weeks. I was also getting COVID tested once a week just because, like, because I thought I had COVID. I was getting tested once a week just so I knew that I didn't have COVID. And I hung out with people that kind of did the same, or like people that I was only with them and they were getting, I was getting tested. And it's like, okay, well, we're all good, you know? So just like we're constantly in awareness of where we've been. And like, if, you know, if we have any connection to anybody that's ever had it, kind of thing. But now, like I said, it's a little bit more relaxed because a lot of us are vaccinated now, so it's a little different. But during peak times, that's kind of how we navigated and negotiated that.
Would you be willing to share anything about the experience of going to get vaccinated, what that's been like for you?
It's been really easy. I was kind of fortunate. I got a flyer from somebody, a digital flyer, that had an email on it, and I just emailed them, and they're like, oh, we're all booked up. And I was like, and now it's, like I said, it's more accessible now, it seems. And somebody canceled last minute. I was able to get the first dose, and I got the second dose a few weeks ago. So it was really easy, and I didn't have any side effects, which was nice. I know that it's a wide range of people with different side effects, and I got really fortunate to not have that. So it was really easy.
And you touched on this a little bit already, but sort of how have like the social dynamics changed now that you've been vaccinated? So what if sort of was the transition point between conversations about frequency of testing to conversations about whether or not you or anyone else has been vaccinated?
Ooh, that's a good one. You asked really good questions. I guess I can't pinpoint necessarily like a transition, but I guess like a sense of hope and like among friends, like, oh, okay, we can hug now because we're both vaccinated. We can have physical touch. How strange is that? So it definitely, I would say like that changes, you know, I'm a very emotional person and very like, I'm really into physical touch. That's a big thing for me. So like being able to do that again is a big deal. Not being afraid of, you know, visiting my mom, who's also vaccinated, you know, visiting my mom and she's immunocompromised and like, oh, I'm going to make her sick. No, I can actually like hug her and we can go out together. So I think that the transition mentally, it's still jarring being around like a group. I've been around a couple groups of people now and it's like, oh wow, I'm not used to this. It feels weird. Like going back to playing shows is going to be really strange. Like I don't even know how to feel about that, you know, because it's like, it's been so long. It almost felt like it was never going to happen again. So I guess like, we'll see what that's like when we get there.
I'd love to hear a bit more about how your relationship to touch changed during the pandemic.
It definitely, like, there was a lot of apprehension in it in ways where it wasn't before. Or, like, you know, it, like, if you would, like, as a jerk reaction, accidentally go in to hug somebody and they're like, oh, you know what I mean? They back up, like, whoa. It made you feel kind of icky, you know what I mean? You didn't feel too good about it. And it's like, ah, like these things that used to like bring people together and like feel good, like don't feel good anymore. It doesn't feel good to do this anymore. And I guess that like that specifically during COVID was really tough. really tough. And then also, like, if you did, like, it's like, ooh, we're taking a risk by hugging each other. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, man, like, that's not how we want it to be. But, you know, it's that's how it was at the time, and it still is. Like, we shouldn't just go hugging random people still, obviously. But, you know, like, as more of us get vaccinated and we hang out with vaccinated people, you can hug them. That's okay. And it feels nice, I guess. And, you know, it was really kind of a bummer during the heavy pandemic quarantine when we couldn't do those things.
How are you feeling about the immediate future?
Pretty hopeful, I think. Pretty hopeful. I was just listening to something this morning that was talking about businesses, specifically restaurants and bars and stuff, that are slowly starting to open up, and there's a high demand for workers. And I guess, like, I feel a little bit hopeful about that, that things are going to, again, like, what is normal? You know what I mean? What is that going to look like? I don't know. Will it be like what it was like before? I have no idea. I can't predict that. But at least things seem like they're getting better. People are, like, being able to do things a little bit more again. And I think, like, I guess just hopeful. Also, again, like, to touch back on the racial justice stuff, like, continuing that fight, like, that's something that really, really needs to not be let go of. Like, that has to continue. And I feel like there's enough fire within people to want to continue with that as well. So, like I said, just in general, hopeful based on those things.
What are some of your desires for a longer term future?
Desires, like, for me specifically or just in general?
Both.
Well, international travel will be a lot of fun, like, when that kind of goes back to whatever this new normal is supposed to be. International travel, playing more shows. I'm also in a fire academy right now, like, side note. So, like, you know, hopefully that becoming more of a thing for me personally, like, getting to do more of that and, like, work in that. Again, like, seeing progress, seeing change, like, and like, that's stuff I want to personally see. And, like, I'll do my part and what I can to see that change happen. So, yeah, I guess in general, that's a little bit of a few things.
Thank you so much for that. So some of this has come up already in the interview, but I'm curious, with the sort of dominant narrative of self-care in our moment, what are some of the ways that you've been taking care of yourself?
Well, I guess recently, to get, like, a little bit on a more personal level. So I was raised in a way that was very much like, you know, pull your boots up by the bootstraps or whatever and get over it. Like, if it didn't happen, or if you don't talk about it, it didn't happen kind of deal. And like I said, I went from being kind of checked out to 10 months of self-care, like all the things I talked about earlier, like the meditation, the therapy, you know, sleeping, like all these things that I neglected before. I went from that to into this year, starting in January, I went to working 60 hours a week, and I'm in a fire academy on the weekend, so I'm basically busy 80 to 90 hours a week, and didn't have a transitional period, had no plan for self-care, and inevitably I burned out, you know, 3 months in, and it definitely, like, made me realize, like, how vital mental health is, you know. And I know, like, a lot of people struggle with mental health issues, and I'm no different in that case. And most recently, that's been the most important thing in my life, is my mental health. Like, what am I doing every day to make sure that I am taking care of myself and, like, not let myself crash and burn like that, you know, get depressed and anxious and, like, all those things. You know, I don't want to ever have to go there again. And I learned, like, I don't have to be in pain if I don't want to be. Like, there's help. And just asking for help is the first step to happiness. At least for me, it was, you know?
I believe I saw a critter in the background. I was wondering if you would introduce them.
There is a critter in the background. Come here. This is my dog, Ferris.
Hello, Ferris.
Oh, here, I'll bring this. Bring it in a little post. Do you have a pet, too?
I am a very proud cat parent.
Amazing. Do you like dogs, too?
I cohabitate with a dog.
Oh, okay.
I am acculturated enough to dog that dogs that I can cohabitate with them now, but I don't envision forming purposeful, intense kinship ties with many dogs in my lifetime.
I respect that. And, you know, I used to feel that way about cats, actually.
Yeah.
And then I met like a couple of just absolutely lovely cats that I just fell in love with. I like the real cuddly kinds that let you hold them and you know, smother them a little bit and they tolerate it. Where most cats don't tolerate that very much, as I'm sure you know.
What's it been like cohabitating with Ferris during the pandemic?
Life saving. Absolutely. I've had my dog for 9 years, and that's actually, I just had this conversation with someone recently. So I have a friend who got a dog at the very beginning of the pandemic, and now like they're trying to go out, and it's really challenging because this dog was a puppy when they got it, and now she's a full grown dog, and they're very anxious about leaving her home alone. And she gets very anxious. She's very, you know, attached and all that stuff, has attachment issues. But fortunately, I've had Ferris since she was a puppy and she's 9. So I've had her for a very long time. And, you know, it was just because I was working so much. And now I'm working so much again. And I just am so grateful for the time that I got to spend with her and, like, go on long walks and, you know, I took her to the beach a couple times, you know. And I'm really grateful that I got to have that time with her.
This is my second last question. So we know we're in this moment that there's a flurry of scientific and medical research happening. I'm wondering what you think people in the humanities and the social sciences could be studying and working on right now to help us understand the social aspect of COVID-19.
You said what social scientists could be studying about the social aspect of it?
Yeah, social scientists and people in the humanities.
Okay. I mean, based on my general knowledge of it, it's just, for me, it's another example of classism. You know, like, I read a lot and I hear a lot on, you know, NPR and BBC are my two main news sources that I go to a lot. And I see a lot about, you know, like right now, India is suffering from it. Like, why don't they have more vaccines? Like, what's going on with that? You know, it's like the westernized countries have been prioritized in getting vaccines and having accessibility to COVID tests to prevent the spread a little bit better than other countries. And I feel like maybe something in that way is another way to do some research on how, even like when it comes down to a global pandemic, how that affects humanity as a whole, again, on the social aspect, on the class aspect of it, you know, and like how bringing awareness to that can make it like, oh, we should give these countries as many vaccinations as we're giving Europe and the United States and see what kind of effect that would have on the world. You know, like I'd be curious to do that instead of prioritizing the Western countries, if that makes sense.
And this is my last question. So this is an oral history interview. And as a historian, I come to that with my own assumptions and biases from my field and how we're trained at this moment. One of the things that we are trained to value is to pay very sincere attention to what our historical actors thought was important. So I'd like to ask you if you could speak to some imagined historian of the future, one that never lived through this. What kinds of stories would you want to be sure aren't forgotten?
The first thing that comes to mind for me is like the photos that we saw of the healthcare workers that had like the crazy bruises on their face from wearing masks, you know, 24 hours a day, like sucked onto their face, like to see the overcrowded ICUs, to see the refrigerated containers filled with bodies. Like, I feel that's like a very dramatic way of thinking about it. But like, you know, I feel like that is like some, it's really important to remember the ground. Like, we have hope if things are getting better. Like, you know, people are getting vaccinated. Things are opening up. Like, things are okay. It's getting better. But I think it's important for people not to forget what it was like in that time. You know, I think it's really, really important. And I guess just know, like, okay, action wasn't taken sooner. And this is what happened as an effect to that. And this is what can happen in a global pandemic in modern times when action isn't taken sooner. And, you know, like I said, I was pretty fortunate that I didn't, I was lucky with myself and like what I had to go through during the pandemic, but I know people that lost people. Like, my best friend lost one of her aunts, and I was really close to that aunt. You know, there's people that lost multiple people in their family. And I guess just like it pays respects to those people that died during this time to not forget. And again, the healthcare workers to like not forget like the sacrifices that they made and the burnout they suffered to help other people. I think that's really important.
I want to thank you so much for everything that you've shared with me here today. And at this point, I just want to offer you some space if there's something that you would like to share about COVID-19 or anything you want to say to a historian of the future, to give you that space to do so if my questions haven't brought you there already.
You know, I think that questions were absolutely fantastic. And I definitely, I guess I just hope that something like this doesn't happen again. And I hope that whatever has been learned now can be applied to the future so we know how to better handle a situation if it ever arises again, God forbid. I guess that's the only thing I would end with on that.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you.